CITR 101.9 FM presents News 101, Vancouver's volunteer-produced student and community newscast. Now, here's your host, Rita Farkas.
Good evening. Coming up on the program, an arrest has been made in connection with the UBC threats. And the provincial NDP takes a stand against a plan to put a generator in one of BC's provincial parks. We'll have all this, plus arts, sports, and your five-day weather forecast, coming up in the next half hour right here on News 101. The RCMP have made an arrest in connection with those threats made against the Biosciences building on January 3rd and the campus at large on February 6th. Hui Li, aged 19, was arrested and taken into custody on Friday, charged with two counts of uttering threats and two counts of mischief. Li was released on the conditions that he not return to UBC, not possess any firearms, and surrender his passport. And he is set to appear in Richmond Provincial Court on Monday. We will bring you more on this story on Friday as it develops. Now, with a look at local and provincial news, we're joined in studios by News 101 reporters Leanne Yu, Tracy Fuller, and Carrie Baptist.
Vancouver dry dock workers are back on the job today after an asbestos scare forced them off the job Wednesday. A ship was being worked on which contained asbestos, but it was thought that all of the places which contained asbestos had already been sealed off. Wednesday, additional asbestos pockets were identified. As many as 100 workers may have been exposed. Union President Toby Charette says that as soon as the new pockets of asbestos were identified, specialists were brought in to deal with the situation. A company called Westcor was brought in to go through the entire ship, and they now have ensured that there is no remaining asbestos to endanger workers.
A local woman is being fined for her complaint against Red Robin restaurant. Muzia Azvu Tima filed a complaint against the Richmond location of the chain restaurant, citing racial discrimination as the cause. The BC Human Rights Tribunal has discarded the complaint and is now ordering Tina to pay a $1,500 fine. The offense allegedly happened back in 2006 when Tima and a male friend had to wait 45 minutes for a table, despite the restaurant being nearly empty. Tima adds they had to wait 20 minutes for their server to show up at the table and another 45 minutes for food to arrive. Shortly after, a staff member told the two to leave on claims that Tima's friend had acted inappropriately by slapping an employee's bottom. Tima believes she and her friend were discriminated against because they are black. She says the incident caused post-traumatic stress disorder, causing her to sleepwalk and do poorly in her studies here at UBC. The tribunal found her claims to be unsubstantiated.
There is some union unrest in BC's trucking industry. Trucking Teamsters Union representative Don McGill has stated that the Independent Contractors Business Association, also known as the ICBA, isn't living up to an agreement they made with the Teamsters 2 years ago. That agreement was meant to ensure that trucking rates would be adjusted to compensate owner-operators for increasing fuel costs and maintenance repairs. McGill says that the intent of the agreement was for the ICBA to adjust their rates to about the same amount as the unionized sector rates. He says that this agreement is not being honored and that truckers are being, quote, squeezed on the rates. ICBA President Philip Rothstein disagrees. He says that McGill's frustration comes from the fact that most BC truckers are non-unionized, which means that McGill has very little control over setting rates in most of the province.
The NDP is taking a stand against a plan for a new power plant in one of BC's provincial parks. Currently, a private company is exploring the possibility of running a run-of-river hydroelectric plant on the Pitt River. This proposal, however, would involve developing a part of Pinecone Burke Provincial Park. NDP environment critic Shane Simpson says that using our provincial parks for such a purpose is inappropriate. Simpson says that the plan will damage the environment in a Class A park in exchange for a few gains in energy security. A packed public meeting on the proposal was held this past Thursday in Pitt Meadows, but authorities were forced to cancel it and reschedule because the fire marshal determined that the number of people packed into the room constituted a fire hazard.
as the storm of attention surrounding the life insurance offer to the late Chuck Cadman continues. News of his family's reaction is the new focus. Chuck Cadman's wife, Donna, is scheduled to run as the Conservative candidate in Surrey North Riding. But questions have been raised about whether or not she will continue to support a party that allegedly tried to bribe her husband with a $1 million life insurance policy just months before his death. Today, Jody Cadman, Chuck's daughter, spoke with the CBC and told them she is urging her mother to leave the Conservative Party and run as an independent instead. Jody also told the broadcaster of her memory of her father telling her about the bribe, which she says caused her to break down in tears. She says she was proud of her father's integrity and is now surprised by her mother's persistence in supporting the Conservative Party. Jody says she cannot understand why her mother would run for the Conservative Party and also accuses them of trying to bribe her husband. Meanwhile, Donna Cadman's campaign manager, Bill Zemianski, claims there's no problem sticking with the Conservative Party. He says there may be some disagreements, but that she supports the Prime Minister and the Prime Minister supports her. Donna Cadman is expected to issue a press release in the next few days.
And it's time for a quick break, but stay tuned to CITR for more news following these public service announcements.
Mr. Tambourine Man! Mr. Tambourine Man!
Hey!
Mr. Tambourine
Man. Hi, this is William Shatner. Imagine a children's hospital network that boldly goes where none have gone before, and that's Shriners Hospitals for Children. Shriners Hospitals combine state-of-the-art research and teaching programs with world-class orthopedic burn, spinal cord injury, and cleft lip and palate medical care. At Shriners, tomorrow's medical care is here today. Call 1-800-361-7256 for more information. Shriners, having fun and helping kids.
Improv. March shows. Teddy bears and rainbows.
What?
It's the UBC Improv Team's March shows.
Oh, no, you didn't.
Oh, yes, I did. Did I? So check this out. Shows are happening Tuesday, March 4th and Wednesday, March 5th at 7 p.m. Cost is extremely reasonable. You can find the laughter at the Scarf Building, Room 100 on University Boulevard and Main Mall, UBC.
The UBC Ski and Snowboard Club is a nonprofit, democratic, student-run organization dedicated to promoting the sports of skiing and snowboarding and the associated lifestyle.
We endeavor to make skiing and snowboarding accessible and fun by actively seeking out the best deals and discounts for our members, as well as organizing trips to local ski areas and setting up numerous social events.
Come on one of our legendary trips and explore the glory of riding in British Columbia. Or join us at the bar to discover the true meaning of debauchery. Ask your roommate, ask your parents, ask the RCMP. Who has the most fun at UBC? You'll get the same answer. The Ski and Snowboard Club.
Yeah. Joining the Ski and Board Club is easy. Come by our office, sub 115, anytime with some money to become a member. Your membership gives you access to all the deals offered by our sponsors, cheap beverages at our parties, an invitation to all club events, and of course, only members can come on the trips.
Yeah.
This is News 101, and the current time is 5:12. Moving into international news, a new plan to redevelop part of Harlem for the creation of luxury high-rises has many residents of the New York borough up in arms. With more on that, we turn to FSRN.
A debate is underway in Harlem about whether a proposed rezoning plan will turn the center of Black culture and business into a canyon of luxury high-rises. While real estate developers dream of lavish homes, many Harlemites worry that the massive redevelopment of 125th Street could change their neighborhood forever. FSRN's Renee Feltz reports.
Much of Harlem's unique character flows from 125th Street. It's a bustling hub of commercial and cultural activity that's made this Manhattan neighborhood famous.
If you leave Africa and come to America and you go back home, yes, you have you been to Harlem?
Right.
If you say you haven't been to Harlem, they say go back. You haven't been to the United States.
Sukulu Shenge owns the Record Shack on 125th Street, across from the Apollo Theater. He's a member of the Coalition to Save Harlem, which is leading grassroots opposition to a city proposal to rezone 125th Street. The city says it wants to change outmoded zoning bans on building use and density that stifle commercial and housing growth. But opponents say the plan encourages developers to build luxury high-rises and upscale apartments and office space. They say development has already led to higher costs for business owners who rent storefronts like Shenge. Shenge says he could be priced off the street he helped define.
The Record Shack is the only thing left now, which is the semblance of black-owned business and a musical outlet. Why should it come down to that?
Retail space near the Record Shack already leases for three times what Shenge pays. Stephen Williams is a third-generation Harlem resident. He developed three buildings along 125th Street and supports the rezoning plan. Williams admits it will displace small businesses.
They will be able to stay in the community. They might have to relocate off of 125th Street, but I do believe that there are opportunities for them throughout the general neighborhood.
Williams says he plans to hire local residents for at least a quarter of the jobs created by his next project, redeveloping the historic Victoria Theater and connecting it to the Apollo Theater. The site will include two theaters and the Harlem Jazz Museum, as well as a hotel and apartments. It's the kind of development encouraged by the rezoning plan's Special Arts and Entertainment District.
They speak to the same vision, and that is creating a cultural arts center here in the main quarter of 125th Street, as well as to create catalysts that will benefit businesses as well as the residents of Harlem.
Developers who include arts and entertainment venues in the entertainment district will get the incentive to build taller buildings with denser capacities. Williams says his development will also include affordable housing, but it will likely be off-site, about two blocks away. Critics say even this housing will be out of reach of the average Harlem resident. The New York City Planning Commission is scheduled to vote on the 125th rezoning proposal on March 10th. From there, it goes to City Council. Harlem's City Council member and Mayor Michael Bloomberg support the plan, which means it's likely to pass. If the movement to defeat the plan succeeds, organizers say it could save the epicenter of black culture and business from being torn down in the name of progress. If it fails, there will always be the Special Arts and Entertainment District, but Harlem historian Henry Adams says it won't be the same.
I'm not suggesting that Harlem will cease to exist once black people are gone, but as is true of New Orleans, it will be a different place and it'll be a diminished place that is not as rich, that is not as great a contributor to American history and culture and heritage.
For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Renee Phelps.
And thanks to FSRN for that piece. We're going to go now to a quick PSA break, and when we come back, we'll update you on UBC Sports.
Can't you hear it? The other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
What really happens when we sleep? Discover the answers with a free 8-week course on dreams and out-of-body experiences. Begin a journey that will change your perspective on life. Learn about OBEs and how to have them and unlock the mysteries of dreaming. The course begins Saturday, 8th of March, and runs from 3:30 to 4:30 p.m. It takes place at the Library Square Conference Center, 350 West Georgia Street, downtown Vancouver. To reserve a spot or for more information, call 1-877-GNOSIS1 or email vancouver@gnosticmovement.com.
do leeks, daffodils, and male chorus singing have in common?
They are all symbols of Wales, and they will come together on the 1st of March, St. David's Day.
The choir, sponsored by the UBC Faculty Women's Club, will perform a benefit concert as a scholarship fundraiser for UBC students. Help the Vancouver Welsh Men's Choir celebrate the occasion at St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Vancouver.
The event will be taking place Saturday, March 1st, 2008, 8 p.m. at St. Patrick's Catholic Church, located at 2881 Main Street, Vancouver. To order tickets, call 604-263-9567 or 604-224-3941.
Welcome back to News 101 on CITR. I'm Rita Farkas, coming to you live from the Student Union Building at UBC. Thanks for being with us tonight. Right now, it's 5:24 and time to look back at the past weekend in UBC athletics. Here's Tyler Noble with Thunderbird Ion Sports.
It was a weekend like no other for UBC athletics, with victories in key playoff games on several fronts. Both basketball teams are headed to the Nationals following triumphs in the Canada West playoffs. More on men's and women's hoops in a moment, but first, both the men's and women's volleyball teams were in action at the CIS Nationals over the weekend, with history made by one of the Thunderbird squads. Jeff Sargent has the details.
The women's volleyball team has captured their first CIS National title since 1978 with a massive 5-set win over the Montreal Carabins Saturday night. After the T-Birds completed an historic comeback to beat the Alberta Pandas in 5 sets Friday night to advance to the championship game, UBC found themselves down 2-1 once again. The Ladybirds tied the match at 1 set apiece with a 25-21 second frame win, but the relentless Carabins stormed back to take the third 25-20 as UBC had their backs against the wall. After taking the fourth set 28-26, the two teams traded points throughout the fifth, forcing the final frame into extra points in front of a raucous crowd at the University of New Brunswick. The Ladybirds had a chance to close out the match up 14-12, but Montreal came back with 3 straight points to go up 15-14 and forced a match point of their own. Montreal then set CIS Player of the Year Letitia Chulak for the kill attempt, but a massive Thunderbird block kept UBC alive. Liz Cordonia and Jamie Broder both picked up match-saving kills before UBC went up 19-18, the Birds' 4th match point. Chulak went for yet another kill attempt, but the tandem Thunderbird block earned UBC their first national gold in 30 years. UBC libero Claire Hanna earned Player of the Match honors with 16 digs, while Cordonnier and Broder were both named to the tournament All-Star team. Captain and Canada West Player of the Year Carla Bradstock was named tournament MVP with a 54-assist, 10-dig effort, and she describes the elation after finally winning gold.
I've waited 5 years, if not longer. I mean, my mom was the last year to win a national championship, so I've waited long to be a T-Bird, and I've waited the full 5 years to win the gold, and finally we have it here around our neck, so it's a great feeling.
The win also means the end of an era for the Lady Birds, who have now won 7 medals in the past 13 years, as Bradstock, Broder, and Caitlin Knowles all played for the blue and gold for the final time in their careers. Head coach Doug Reimer will now look for some young recruits as the Birds try to repeat as champions next year, once again being held in Fredericton. After being relegated to the consolation round of the CIS Nationals with a 4-set loss to the Dalhousie Tigers, the men's volleyball team finished the tournament strong, beating the host Laval Rouge Or in 5 sets, going home with a 5th-place finish. Despite a promising regular season, the Birds faltered down the stretch, and despite a massive effort from captain Andrew Bonner in Friday's quarterfinal that had him boast 17 kills, UBC was forced into a relegation matchup with the McMaster Marauders. UBC found themselves down 2-0, but rallied back, winning the 5th set 15-8, and advanced to the 5th-place game. The Thunderbirds struck first against Laval, squeaking out a 26-24 first-set win, but the Rouge Or battled back with the support of the hometown crowd, taking the 2nd and 3rd sets, forcing the Thunderbirds into a do-or-die situation. UBC was up 12-8 in the 5th when a frustrated Laval team suffered a meltdown in a bizarre finish. Captain Thierry Lavigne was protesting with the officials, and after a tirade was handed a red card. Laval was unable to sub in another player, however, and could only place 5 players on the court, so the match was called, with UBC winning via forfeit and awarded a 15-8 final frame win. Captain Andrew Bonner, playing in his final game as a UBC Thunderbird, finished with 15 kills and 7 digs, but it was the Steve Gotch show, as the 4th-year bird posted 24 kills 9 digs and a .450 hitting percentage in one of the tournament's top performances. CIS Libero of the Year Blair Ban had 18 digs as well, as the Thunderbirds also say goodbye to veteran Matt Liberde and fifth-year transfer Graham Siglett. The Thompson Rivers Wolfpack defeated Dalhousie in 5 sets to take the bronze medal, while the Alberta Golden Bears beat the Winnipeg Westmen in 4 sets to take their first national title since 2005. Jeff Sargent, CITR Sports.
The UBC Thunderbirds are Canada West men's basketball champions for a second straight year after edging the Alberta Golden Bears 92-90 at the University of Calgary on Saturday night. Led by fourth-year guard Chris Dick, the Birds fended off a pesky Bears squad that made it close until the very end. The win in the Canada West Championship follows UBC's 77-69 upset over the Calgary Dinos in Friday's semifinal. The victories over both Central Division teams at the Final Four was extra sweet for the boys in blue and gold after losing in the regular season to both Alberta squads. Dick scored a combined 53 points for UBC in the 2 outings.
Obviously, it feels real good. Going into it, we felt like, I don't think we got a whole lot of respect. You know, a lot of people are saying, oh, you guys had a tough regular season. You know, you never really consistently played well, all this stuff. But we came in here, we felt like it was us against everyone else, and we came in here as a family, as a team, and, you know, we just got the job done together in front of two home crowd fans, right? And so it feels real good to be back-to-back champions.
Brent Malish was a monster on defense for the Thunderbirds, grabbing 17 boards to go with his 15 points on Saturday night. Matt Ratcher posted 14, while Blaine LeBranch had a dozen coming off the bench. Both Alberta and UBC will represent the Canada West at the CIS Final 8 in Ottawa, March 14th to 16th. Playing their final games ever on BC soil, UBC's senior trio of Erica McGinnis, Kate Haggerty, and Julie Little combined for 48 points en route to the Thunderbirds' second straight Canada West title in women's basketball. UBC beat the Regina Cougars 70-59 Saturday night up at Simon Fraser University, giving the Thunderbirds the number 2 seed at the CIS Nationals next weekend at the University of Saskatchewan. They reached the Canada West final after defeating the Alberta Pandas 76-66 on Friday. The Thunderbirds hit 5 of their first 6 field goals to build a 12-4 lead in the opening quarter of Saturday's Canada West Championship. UBC held Regina to just 25% shooting from the field in the first 10 minutes, en route to a 41-34 lead at halftime. Leanne Evans had 9 blocks on the night, finishing just 1 shy of a triple-double. Evans also scored 12 points and picked up 14 rebounds.
I think this weekend we just knew that these were important games, and we wanted to prove that we really were a good team after our performance last week, and we just played together as a team. Like last week, we didn't have many assists, and we moved the ball around and really focused on defense to give us energy, and I just think we came out with more energy and played well together as a team.
The Birds extended their lead to as much as 16 points in the fourth quarter, utilizing 13 team blocks and 9 team steals to shut down the high-powered Cougar offense. McGinnis finished with a game high of 23 points, shooting 8 for 13 from the field. Little added 14 points, while Haggerty chipped in with 11. The Thunderbirds will take on the Toronto Varsity Blues in the national quarterfinals on Friday night, a game we'll have for you on CITR just after 6 p.m. Pacific time. Be sure to join us for the pregame show at 5:45, immediately following News 101. To baseball now, and the UBC Thunderbirds opened regular season play with a doubleheader sweep of the Corbin College Warriors down in Salem, Oregon over the weekend. UBC's Ryan Pilgrim got the Birds off to a great start in Game 1 on Saturday with a 2-run shot over the left center wall. The Warriors couldn't get their bats going at all, falling 4-0, with Mark Hardy getting the win, allowing just 3 hits for the shutout. The rematch didn't fare any better for Corbin, as starting pitcher Jason Braun allowed 5 earned runs on 4 hits through 6 innings, with outfielder Nick Lenvoy leading UBC's bats with a 2-run homer in the 6th to put UBC up 5-1. Sammy Starr added a solo shot in the 7th as UBC cruised to a 6-1 victory, with Josh Brink getting the win. And that's your Thunderbird Eye on Sports for this Monday. I'm Tyler Noble.
And thanks for that sports update, Tyler. We now wrap up with meteorologist Selena Ferris with your 5-day weather forecast. Selena.
We have some nicer weather in store for this week. As a high-pressure ridge develops over the region, the skies will clear. Overnight, expect high winds to clear out the remaining clouds, leaving Tuesday sunny, a high of 9 degrees and an overnight low down to 2. Wednesday will remain sunny with a high of 8 degrees. Thursday, expect the clouds to begin to roll back in for a mix of sun and cloud. And Friday will be cloudy with sunny periods. That's your 5-day weather brought to you by the Storm Club at UBC. For more information, you can email us at stormubc@gmail.com.
And there you have it, folks. That's your weather update as well, so you're all set for the rest of the week. That's our program for March 3rd, 2008. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. And if you'd like to share your comments, give us a hot news tip, or get involved with the show, contact us. Our phone number is 604-822-5334, or you can email news@citr.ca. Megan Turcato produced this radio program. For more news, join us Friday at 5 p.m. for the next edition of News 101. From the entire news team here at CITR, this is Rita Farkas thanking you for listening. Stay tuned for Wings coming up next on 101.9 FM CITR.